Hello and welcome to the Green Room Golf Course podcast from the British and International Golf Greenkeepers Association. Thanks for listening to this podcast, which sheds a light upon the golf industry and what it takes to maintain a modern course. I hope you enjoy the show. Today, we're bringing together two of the leading names in greenkeeping as we take a look at what it's like to prepare a golf course for the Open Championship. Of course, this week was supposed to be the week of the Open, and we're all looking forward to heading down to Kent, Royal St. George's, to see what happened, but it wasn't to be. A real shame. But I hope that by talking to our guests, we'll get an insight into what it takes to host the Open. And they'll also give you an insight into how these guys progressed in their careers and what it takes to make it to the top of the game. So firstly, let me introduce you to Paul Larson, who's head greenkeeper at Royal St. George's in Kent. And this week, the Open should be taking place out on his fairways. But as we learned a few months ago when I spoke to him, it's not to be. We've got to wait until 2021. It's a real shame. Our other guest is Craig Both. He's link superintendent at Carnoustie, which last hosted the Open in 2018. Craig's been at Carnoustie his entire career, and he's steadily worked his way to the top through a passion for the golf course and a commitment to continuing his professional development. In 2018, Carnoustie was also the first reigning environmental golf course of the year to host the Open. It's one I missed because I dislocated my foot, and I was absolutely gutted because I know Craig well and I was really looking forward to it. As Sandra mentioned, please feel free to ask any questions via the chat function that can be found at the bottom of your screen, and I'll pose those questions on your behalf when I've gone through my own very extensive list, because I'm really looking forward to this. I've been thinking questions all day. So let's crack on, shall we? Paul, we'll start with you.
Yes.
Hopefully we're going to be the man of the moment, but it's not quite happening yet. We had a chat when the Open was postponed a couple of months ago, and people can check back on the bigger website and check that out. Can you give me an update on everything that's happened at Royal St. George's since then? I know at the time everybody was furloughed and you're basically on your own. How are things now?
Well, yeah, I think about 3 or 4 weeks ago, I got all the lads back. Also, the rules were relaxed a little bit. Quite a bit of a boom in everyone playing golf, and we're absolutely packed with numbers on the golf course. So I really needed everyone back pretty quick. We just spent the last 3 or 4 weeks trying to get back to where we were, obviously before lockdown. It's taken a little while to get there. But funny enough, we decided, or the club have, to put an open week for the members. So we're treating it as if we've had the Open, or having the Open this week. So we've got competition every day of the week. We've actually got some sort of pre-warm-up competition tomorrow on the Wednesday. Hundreds playing. It's a really busy bit of golf clubs. So my team, it's almost as if we're doing an Open without the Open. We've just been flat out, to be honest with you.
Wow, that's a baptism of fire for those guys coming back straight back into that level of work.
Yeah,
I don't want to put your foot in it immediately in this website, but I imagine you were well consulted on that one, and your thoughts on what you know. A
couple of weeks' notice was all.
Yeah, absolutely.
A week's notice, and we kind of knew. My chairman of Green's idea it was actually. And he did ask me a while about, and I thought, yeah, it's a great idea. It's quite difficult with the weather conditions and not getting much rain. So even if you are slow in preparations for an Open, everything is going to be taken into account, the weather. So it's been still difficult, but the lads, yeah, it's been just sort of flat out really, especially if you've got used to being at home. Suddenly you're back into work, and to be fair to them, they've done a really good job, and all the members are all excited, they're all quite happy so far.
Brilliant. You jumped on a mower yourself, didn't you, early on when it was just you? Have you been showing them how it's done?
Well, since they all come back, I've gone back to my old ways.
Good on you.
So anyway, I've done, you know what, it was really nice, as I said to you before. It's just good to do everything again. I enjoy hand cutting, all the rest of it. Lost me belly, but it's coming back now. But every morning I go on a tease, I divot the tease, swish the tease, blah, blah, blah. I like to have a drive round, see what little things I've missed or we've missed. And it's kind of like a little sweep operation, but it gives me something to do each morning to prep and freeze up a member of the staff to be doing something else. And I still hand cut a lot, so for the numbers, yeah. It helps. So,
Good on you. Craig, what happened at Carnoustie when lockdown was announced and in the months since? How have things been up there? 500 miles. I was just checking, 500 miles further north than Paul. It must be a very different situation.
It's pretty much the same. With a lot of guys off. We're in doing half days, central maintenance. The team gelled really well. You know, there's a wee bit of camaraderie there, you know, a bit of laughing about. So we've gotten on well. Now we've still got 10 guys off, so hopefully we'll get them back soon. But for a start, it was dry and warm, need a lot of water on the course to keep things going. Of course, you're not wanting too much growth, you weren't feeding as much, just things were different, but it was good. I quite liked it with no golfers on the course. You were able to do a few extra things, but now they're back, it's a bit different.
And how are you both finding the busyness alongside the need to maintain a course with a reduced staff? Do you find yourself bumping into golfers a little more than you would have done in the past?
We start early in the morning anyway. We've still got our first tee off time in the morning is 8 o'clock. So it gives us plenty of time to get in front of them. The guys are starting from 4:30 to all staggered starts. So it's 4:30 to 5:30. It's fine. We're getting on fine. The guys are doing a great job. Can't complain about any of them. You know, doing a really good job.
Right. Okay. Right. We'll go with you, Craig. 2018, you were in charge of Carnoustie. I know Sandy Reid was above you as links superintendent, but de facto head greenkeeper of the course for the Open. What's that, and Paul's missed out on that this week, what's that week like for you in charge? The Open's there, the cameras are there, the audience is there. What's that week like?
It's a long week, but the buzz of the tournament gets you through it. You know, there's a lot of early starts, late nights, the buzz, the meeting the players, talking to the players, you know, just talking about your golf course, you know, all the guys are they're proud of what they're showing off to the world, you know. It really is a good week. It's just such a buzz.
Yeah. Do you feel a lot of pressure at that point?
Yes and no. 2018 was quite dry, so I know I was getting a bit of stick maybe about 4 or 5 weeks out from the tournament. People were saying, oh, you're still watering fairways. But we get a lot of visitors here. You know, we get 45,000 rounds a year. So you've got to look after your course while it's so busy. But once the course closed 3 weeks out, we were able to dry the place down, dry the fairways down. So, the end result was very good.
Brilliant. Do you hear a lot of feedback from the players during the event?
There's certain ones that like to moan, but there are the ones that give you a lot of good credit, and it's nice to hear. You know, even the caddies and coaches and things like that, and even like TV commentators. It's nice. It's nice to hear. You know, that's what keeps you going.
How do you get that feedback? Does it come firsthand? Do the players search you out? Do they find you?
Just when you're out working, you know, players like to have a chat. You know, they're trying to find out ways of playing the course, so they're wanting to chat to you about how do you do this, or you know, what's the greens running at, or how firm are they? Just they're all trying to find out a wee bit of information which can help them during the week. So yeah, they come and chat to you. Yeah,
brilliant. I mean, that's interesting in itself. You know, that they find you and talk to you. Paul, how was when the Open was last at your spot a couple of years back? What was your experience of it? Was it that same level of interaction, or was the pressure the same?
It was kind of a little bit different because we had the Open back in 11. Mm-hmm. I'd only just come back in February of that year. So, of course, we were preparing. We had Graham, who was my boss then, he'd only just been put in charge as well. So we were kind of up in the air a little bit. Now that I know what to expect, it's fine. We know what to expect. We do go to other Opens. We interact with the other head greenkeepers. I tend to go there for practice days, see what they're doing, and to be fair to the RNA and everything like that, it's been really great to see what your standard you've got to achieve. But in 11, I was changing the holes, and I was doing quite, obviously helping Graham quite a lot, so it felt like I was part of all of it. But changing holes was hard work. I remember changing holes the first day with Grant Moyer with us and everything, and he always says, tell us how it is and everything. We changed the holes, and I was like, how was that, Grant? Oh, it could be better. So straight away, I'm like, oh, God. So the experience of that was we weren't where we should have been, but we learned pretty quick, and by Thursday, we'd nailed it, and by the Sunday, it was like, I know the standards to expect now, so I've got a guy who changed holes now. We've had the amateur, we've had ladies tournaments, we've had quite a lot of other things. So we deal with it in our own way as if it was the Open, so the lads get used to what the expectations are. So for me, experience is everything because I didn't have it in 11. We learned on the spot, but now I kind of know what we've got to expect. The guys, we've done the amateur, we had ladies tournament last week, it doesn't faze us, but they know what we've got to achieve. So that's the difference, but it is the experience of knowing that and what to expect. And then when it comes to the day, hopefully you can enjoy it more because you kind of know the attention to detail that you've got to do.
That's interesting. You raise a couple of points. Did you, in 2018, did you head up to Carnoustie to visit, speak with Craig?
I met Craig in the champagne bar like you do. He just looked totally chilled. I thought this must be easy. I'll make it out. We went for a little walk and just went on a course. And you know what? It's nice. I felt Craig. It's just nice to have half an hour away from it all just to grab a bit of free time because, you know, everyone's on your case and everything. And it's quite nice to meet up with other people. But it was great, the Open up there, because I remember Craig saying to me, people saying it's too green, blah, blah, blah. But when it came to the actual tournament, the fairways were brown. The green stood out. I think you nailed it. It was a great Open.
Fairways were quite happy with the fairways. Yeah, the greens, I was okay about the greens, yeah. But as greenkeepers, you always think you can do better.
Yeah.
It's interesting. You mentioned another thing, Paul, about the RNA picking the holes, hole placements. And one of the questions we have received off our Instagram is how much input does the RNA actually have in the course setup, in the decisions? And at the end of the day, who has the final say? Is it yourself or is it the RNA?
So with actual hole placements at the time, we picked the hole placements roughly 5 months in advance. And when I say that, we've got loads of options where we're going to put the pin, but we'll put the pins leading up to that in all the places we know the hole ain't going to be. And to be fair to Grant, I knew the course really well, even though I was only back in February. I'd worked there 2 years previously in the past, so I kind of played a lot of golf. So we did work in tandem together, and it's quite nice even for the RNA to look at it. It's some sort of reassurance if you can both stand there and say, this is a great spot, we want it here. But ultimately, if I was hand on heart, it has to be the RNA where they actually want it. If they insist it's there, it would go there. If I felt it wasn't right, we could say why.
Mm-hmm.
But that's kind of how it is. With the length, they probably have responsibility for deciding the yardage. You kind of know where roughly it's going to be. And it's just a simple case of, do you move the tees up? Can they get on the fairways if it's into the wind? Things like that. So it is a mixture of everyone combining. But ultimately, they would probably have the final say after consultation, I would say.
Yeah. I think the RNA has been pretty, I would say they've been pretty good over the years. You know, they do listen to you.
Yeah.
I mean, they have to listen to, you know, just wind direction, things like that, you know. But we have a good relationship with the RNA, and I like working with them.
And how early does that relationship start? Are they on site a year before? Is it longer than that? When do they actually start? Because I'm thinking in my head, if I was either of you guys, you'd start working in advance and thinking, I'm going to grow a little bit out there because I want them to have this as tee placement, or, you know, or I want this whole position, so we're going to move it down a little bit. But I imagine they're too smart for that, I imagine.
it all depends, Carl. You know, 99, for the opening of 99, the links were talking to the RNA for years. For 2007, I think it was 5 years out, we discussed when the open was coming back. So you're always working, I'd say we were always working towards an open. You know, that's kind of the pinnacle of the biggest tournament your golf course can get. So you're always working towards that. You've got that in the back of your mind. But yeah, they'll come and speak to you. You know, you get the agronomists coming along, and yeah, you talk about stuff and talk about. I mean, you've got your own bit input. You talk about cutting things out here and there. The RNA will talk to you as well. So yeah, there's a lot of input over the years until we get to the tournament week.
Okay. Yeah, can I reiterate the point there? Like, to be fair, I've worked with Alistair and Grant since 11. They do yearly visits all the way through. So in the back of your mind, no matter whether you got the Open or not, you're still working for what you'd have for the Open. So you probably, for me, I've been working for this 5 or 6 years. We've had a squad conversion, all the rest of it. But the back of your mind is, when are you going to have the Open? Is it all going to be finished by then? And have you got it to the best you can get it for that year? Obviously, with this year going through to next year, that's completely changed. And now we've got to push it all back a year. But it doesn't really matter too much, because you're striving. Next year, I knew what the plan was for next year anyway. And once you've had the Open, you start thinking, what can we do that we'd do different? And you'd be heading for the Open from that year anyway.
Right.
You may have found a few bunkers you would have liked to have moved them. So straight afterwards, you'll use the process of maybe moving that bunker or moving a tee to a different spot. So it's always ongoing. So you always, it's always in the back of your mind. It is an open golf course, so you've got to be prepared for it from a long way out.
Okay. So I'm gonna ask a question that we've received. And I'll go to you, Craig, first, if that's possible. When we're talking about setting up our courses, and at the moment it's very topical in the golf industry, just how far these guys can hit the ball now.
Mm-hmm.
What can you do with your historic golf course? You know, both of your links, so, you know, hundreds of years old. What can you do to protect them from professional golfers and the modern technology that they use?
I think, Carnoustie's, the bunker in at Carnoustie is really good. You know, that's back to James Braid. Just the bunkers are in all the right positions. The wind and the weather plays a factor here as well. So we've been lucky enough that the course has not been ripped apart. I know in 2018, kind of leading up to the tournament, I could see pros driving greens, and I'm thinking, oh God, you know, I'm going to be the one that's responsible for the pros ripping up the place, and I'm going to get a name for myself. But they didn't. So yeah, the weather plays part here. And the bunkering is so good. You have to think your way around about Carnoustie. Third for tees, we actually moved a few tees forward. The 11th, for instance, we moved the tee, I think it was 25 yards forward, and it gave them a shot at hitting a driver at the green, but a lot of them couldn't do it. So, yeah.
Well, I'd agree with Craig. It really is all down to the weather. I can't recall us ever having 4 days where it's not windy. Touch wood, and they might one day and they'd rip it apart, maybe. If it bounced for miles, but you know what? They're not used to the ball rolling so far because they don't play it every day. You know what? I watched Bryson. I watched Martin Slammers the other day saying about him, they might have to change the ball and all that. But Lynx is a little bit different. Do you know what? For me, I don't care if they went round in 25 under. It wouldn't bother me. He played the best that week. But they never seem to rip it when there's winds. It just, they get used to hitting it long and straight. And as soon as we've got so many undulations here that I was talking to a pro who came here in March for a little practice round, get to the 18th, he's on the upslope. He wants to hit a little four iron and punch it in. So he tries to punch it in, but it balloons up into the wind and he's 20 yards short of the green. They're the little shots they don't practice, they're not used to. So some would say we might be a little bit quirky in that matter, but the best golfer finds a way, and they never seem to rip it round on a links course so much. The bunker in is in the right places. Of course, you could say, yeah, downwind or whatever, they're going to carry all the bunkers anyway. But I'd say we're thickening the rough up a little bit. So when they get in the rough, they can't get the spin that they want. So they got to judge it, it goes through the greens, all the rest of it. So it's still a good case. And at the moment, probably less of a factor for us so much than the inland part of the courses where they're a bit softer.
Bigger Members work in some of the most spectacular scenery and landscapes anywhere in the world, and with most carrying some form of camera about their person, it's never been easier to snap a picture and get involved with our annual photographic competition. We're on the lookout for images from throughout the year that showcase excellence in greenkeeping, highlighting how a well-presented course can enhance the surrounding environment. Images of greenkeepers at work within the context of the wider landscape are especially encouraged. Each year, the winner of the competition receives a state-of-the-art piece of technology and a framed print of their winning photograph to be presented at the Bigger Welcome Celebration at BTME. 12 entries will also be selected for inclusion in Bigger's annual desk calendar, distributed to every course manager and head greenkeeper member of the association each year. To enter the competition, email high-quality versions of your photographs, along with your name, membership number and club name, to comps@bigger.co.uk before the deadline at the end of August. Head to the Bigger website to find out more. Links are going to be in the show notes. Best of luck to you.
Do you find that some golfers will engage with you and come and talk to you about these things, maybe come a few weeks in advance to practice, and are they generally the ones that tend to do a little bit better?
Well, I mean, we had guys come in this year in February to have a little bit of practice and things like that. I know the ones that know the course better have got a better chance, so if they've got a chance to practice, yeah, why not?
Okay.
There's been guys that have turned up a week before and won, so I'm not sure what the secret is.
Like you say, it could just be whoever plays well on the day. Okay, let's get down to the nitty gritty. The greens themselves, during an open week, what sort of consistency are you guys looking for on the greens across all 18 holes? Say, what's the consistency that we're looking for?
You want to go, Craig?
On you go for it.
Trina's the smoothness. We're trying to nail that all year round. I get better grasses, the more festive I can get in there, the smoother I'm probably going to be. There's a little bit of bend in there. So we're trying to nail that from a long time away. So we should get that anyway. But like last week, we had the ladies. The Justin Rose series here. So they wanted 9.5 because we had 32 km wind speeds and everything. So I got 9.5. They were happy with the speed. The smoothness, trueness was there.
Can I jump in there? Yeah. What does 9.5 mean across 18 holes?
Well, all I mean, that's the stim, the green speed for the whole 18.
But what's the variation there? Could it be some were 9, some were 10, or are they all 9.2, 9.3, 9.4?
Yeah, that's a great question. And that's probably the difference between a normal competition and the Open. So I would have stimmed 3 greens last week, and I'll try and get that stimp on them 3. I generally know which ones may be slightly different from the others, but with the resources we have, I might double cut or I might cut and roll to get that speed. But each green will probably have been done that way. With the Open, it's changed a lot now, and this is the extra resources you have. We could double cut a green. We will stimp every green after every cut. And the secret is to get them all at the same speed. But that does take a lot of resources, and that's the difference with a normal comp and the Open, is we're going to try and get every green pretty much in the same bracket. So if you're after, I don't know, 9.8 to 10.2, every single green will be between that fraction. So our job will be to get it, to get to them speeds. And to me, that's the difference. Craig might agree or not agree.
No, I agree with you there, Paul. You know, you're trying to get the difference between each green kind of roughly about the same. You know, you could be 2 to 3 inches between greens. That's pretty good. But it's the smoothness and trueness. You know, you're trying to get that consistency over all 18 greens.
Okay.
It can go from a single cut to a double cut.
What does it take in terms of man hours then, in terms of staffing? How much additional staff do you need to have to bring in to achieve that, or resources?
Good question. That's the secret. So last week, I've got 15 guys with 2 mechanics, gardener. We have to do all that with that. You know, I think for the Open, I think we're looking at 50 support total, or 50 people. We'll have 12 people hand cutting greens. Those are my 5 or 6 here. It's like fairways that get cut every day, tees might get cut every day. You're just putting that extra presentation or grooming on every single hole. So what you might do once a week, you're going to do 7 times a week. So that's what you need the extra resources for. But it's like changing holes. You can go around here and change them in 2 hours. Come the Open, you'll take 6 hours to change holes. There's little differences like that.
Because it has to be perfect. It has to be absolutely. Do you have received a question just on the chat function here? Do you roll or do you just cut during Open week? The greens. Sorry, do you roll the greens or do you just cut them?
I'll go with 2018. We just cut the greens. There was no rolling. We tried to get everything with just by cut. That, because a roller could add 6 inches, 8 inches onto a green, and it might take you over the speed that you're required to have. So we just did everything by cut.
Saying that, I'm always a little bit, I love the roller. I like to do a cut and a roll. And I've still got the old Dr. Nikolai method of a cut and a roll the next day. To me, it's all about the turf that you've got. And sometimes with rolling, Craig's right, whatever greens you got, they can decompress a little bit. And the consistency is more at the end of the day. You might get 10 and stimp in the morning, you might be 9.5 by the evening. So that's the varieties. You could get the ultimate goal, and you could get that stimp to stay the same between morning and evening and not lose by so much. Then you could do it with the rolling. So I don't think we've ruled the roller out, but the tendency is to not be using the roller.
Paul, will you have the rollers in for the Open? Or will you just straighten the hair?
Well, the crimpers for the Open, Craig, you know that.
Dear.
I don't know whether it'd be blonde or black, though.
Well, mine's just going grey, so...
Yeah, I sympathise.
Yeah.
We'll stick on these sort of turf questions if you like. You, Paul, you mentioned that you've changed the grass species in recent years. Go on, what was the thinking behind that? Why have we done that?
Do you know what? The real reason was when we had the Open at 11, Grant asked me, Grant Moore once asked me to put the whole certain place. And it was right in the middle of a horrible green patch of Yorkshire fog. And we were like, oh, can we just move it over a third? There's a bit of fescue over there. So in the end, it was always looking for the best spot. And so what you said, what did we evaluate after the Open? Because I was a little bit, not embarrassed by the greens, but I wanted to be able to put a pin wherever you want it, if that's where you want it. And if you cut a hole, you cut into a nice, lovely bit of fescue bend, you get a real sharp edge to the hole, which I didn't think you get with the Yorkshire fog in the rye. So straight after the Open, well, it was probably a couple of years, we decided I need to kill the, get rid of the Yorkshire fog and rye. I just feel you're talking about going to a higher level. That was the next level for us, and it's more sustainable, I would like to think. And I can keep green speeds better with fescue bent mix than with rye power and all the rest of it. So it's, that's been our goal. When you say what you aim for the Open, well, that's been 8 years in the process. I still haven't nailed it. I'm still trying to achieve something higher. So you're always after something else. But yeah, that was the reason why we went to try and get a more fescue bent dominated golf course.
And are these things that a golfer would recognize, or is it just things that you greenkeepers recognize? You know, these tiny, tiny margins that are a step in the right direction. Would a normal human being recognize them?
Yeah, probably not.
I mean, yeah, everyone says that to me. And yeah, they just want to come part of the green. If they roll fast and smooth and they're in the hole, that's all that counts. But I can't give them what they want unless I've got them grasses. That's how I feel. And I do watch, how can I say this? I've seen greens before. You talk about, you see the pros on there and they prefer to play in the morning because greens are smoother than the afternoon, the footprint show and all the rest of it. That's what I think on the links courses. They get with us when Craig's talking about trueness and smoothness. I think we can give them that at 7 o'clock in the evening. So when you're playing later in the afternoon, you're capable of doing just as good a score as the early morning. Whereas you can see tournaments where it tends to be an advantage to get off in the morning playing wise. So there's a little something to think about.
Yeah, interesting. Craig, let's go back to 2018 and your team. After we've had a few days of this happening, really early starts, really late finishes. From a people management side of things, how do you keep your team up to that extremely high level that you need them to be at? You know, they must be getting tired at that point. You know, exhaustion's setting in. How do you keep these guys focused?
It's like I said before, Carl, it's the buzz of the tournament. You know, the guys can, once you've got the tournament week, you know, you've done all the hard work, you're just polishing surfaces, the guys can see that end date in sight. You know, the getting to that point is quite easy at that point, you know, at that time of the week. Probably most of them want to be here after the Sunday night as well, so that's keeping them going too. But yeah, it's just everything that's going on. It's the whole buzz of the tournament that just keeps you going. I mean, we had guys in at 4 o'clock in the morning, and then had guys still hand watering at 11:30 at night. You know, it's tough going, but they get home for a sleep, and they're all up for it. They all want the course to be playing as well as it could do.
Yeah. When you're recruiting staff, then are you looking at them with an eye upon when open week comes around? I need guys that are on point, that are dedicated. Is that what you're looking for when you're? Is that at the forefront of your mind when you're hiring staff?
Yeah, you're always looking for something like that in them, but you train them. You get them trained into that thinking and. That's what it is to work here. You know, you get that burnt into you, you know. Yeah.
I'm just wondering what it is that, you know, you two...
You're looking for a job, Carol?
Yeah. I'm not very good at this journalism, malarkey. I fancy a change. You greenkeepers are very lucky people, spending your working lives outside on the course, that sort of thing. And I think it's too late for me, but...
Craig Carl, it's never too late. I've got guys who've not done this until they're 50, trained them up. But I'd reiterate what Craig says. I'm not recruiting staff just for the Open. Because members here, they want the course like the Open every day. So there is a different standards, and that's the difference between a normal golf course where I might play or somewhere, whereas they're probably not looking at it like us. They might only have 5 or 6 people. They can't do what we can do. And like the guys, I like handcap tees. I like striping them. Some people don't like the stripes. The reason I like it, the guys nail it. They're dead straight. The guy who changes the holes, he's got it. How we have it, how he changes it, is how we change it in the Open. But if you can't get it like that every day, you can't get it suddenly for the Open. So they have to be trained to do it now. You don't just suddenly up your game for the Open. It's got to be like this all the time. But you throw extra at it for the Open, which is the difference, I suppose.
Do they arrive with that sort of drive, or is that something that you work with them to develop?
I think... question. I'd like to, I think they'd have to have that in their minds when they do join, because, that's the goal. As soon as they start, they got to hit the targets we're hitting straight away. And we do take apprentices on here, and I think it's a difficult course for an apprentice to learn. Mm-hmm. It's kind of, they don't have enough time for leeway, because they've got to get to that standard a little bit quicker. And you kind of want that. Feels like I'm always moaning all the time. So you're always going, you've got to push it. But we've got a lovely guy who worked for us who's working out in Cologne now. And I don't know if we gave him a hard time, but we got him to a level. And he didn't really appreciate it until he went to somewhere else and he realised, wow, I'm a bloody good greenkeeper. Went out to see him last year. And he was really proud for me to see him and trying to push the standards at their golf course. And he was like, wow, this is what we used to do. For St. George's, blah blah blah. So, it is quite hard, but isn't it best to learn the best way? And it might be a while to get there, but you know that's the ultimate goal.
Yeah, Craig, you're a bit of a CPD, continuing professional development record breaker for bigger. So even having achieved the highest position in the area, you're obviously still pushing onwards. What's your, what's the drive behind that? You could sit back on your laurels, couldn't you?
Yeah, I could do. I was speaking about this the other day. I just like to try and learn as much as I can, just different things. I think it just helps you on your way. I'm trying to get the guys here to do a bit more learning. I just try to do as much as I can. I don't know why I put myself through it, but college courses and things like that. But I like doing, it helps you. It's helped me with kind of management stuff, doing reports and things like that. So doing college work, it does that kind of thing.
Okay, fair enough. You're keeping it very close to your chest. You don't know why you do it.
I don't know why I do it.
Don't give away your secrets. I get that. I understand. Paul, I don't know your CPD record, but I'm assuming it's sterling and you don't just make it up as you go along.
You get one today.
You get one for today.
I've got loads of points that I don't know because I've never registered. I'm terrible. One day I will. I like to do a multitude of things. And to be fair to Craig, he's very modest. We also run the Lynx Club as well, where we get all the Lynx courses involved not seminars, but we go and play a golf course and we get someone to talk. The thing for me is learning from the other guys, and there's 5 of us that we set up and we're always bouncing ideas off each other, and then they learn from someone else, and it's continuous learning, but not in that structured but slightly informal, but you learn more that way. That's my brief on it. And for us on the Links course, it's completely different to partnering courses and all the rest of it. And I think I've learned loads from what we've been doing with that as well, if I'm allowed to say that.
So yeah, you're talking about other greenkeepers, Paul. It's pretty good, you know. You're exchanging ideas, and even like when I go to like a smaller golf course or go and see the greenkeepers there, you know, you're picking up different things that you would bring into your own workplace, and that's all the whole learning and finding out what other people do.
Can I butt in there? Hi guys, they're all doing qualifying and down their apprenticeships, level twos, level threes, and they like to get on like that. But the best things I've done with my guys, and I haven't done a lot of it this last year because we've been busy, but it's taken them away and looking at other golf courses. And they've said to me they've learned so much from going to other places. If you've got guys that play golf and go somewhere else, they see the difference in standards, or you may pick up ideas and you go, blimey, that was great. I like the way they do that. We'll nick that idea. So that's a great, to me, I find the guys learn more from doing stuff like that, and the more engaged with it.
Did you know that Bigger, alongside our partners ICL, offers a fantastic continue to learn scholarship opportunity for our members? The scholarship invites 5 Bigger members along to attend the Continue to Learn at BTME education programme. Worth approximately £500, the scholarship comprises 3 nights' hotel accommodation and 15 hours' worth of education. The application process takes place during July, so head to the Member Opportunities section of the Bigger website to find out more. Links are in the show notes.
All right, Paul, I'm going to go to some questions that we just had submitted, if that's okay. Just a quick couple of ones. How many pro tees do you have?
How many what?
Pro tees.
Pro tees.
Does that mean it's down to 18? Or have I misread that one? How many pro tees do you have? What's the course record, and what are your visitor numbers throughout the year?
Pro tees, I think, yeah, the champ tees. Well, 18, we're 18.
You just got the 18.
But the thing is, anyone can play the champ tees if they want to. We don't say you can't play them, but the difference is, you know, we're talking about distances. Yeah, the pros hit it miles, but the average golfer doesn't. They go off the champ tees, and it's blooming too hard for them. It's an 80-yard back to the tee and an 80-yard walk forwards and all the rest of it. So they're welcome to play off champ tees this week. It's open to all the members. There's competition for them off the champ tees as well. We actually encourage them to play off champ tees, try and firm them up, stop any moss getting on there, but they just don't get the play. What was the other question?
The other part of that was, what's your course record?
That's a good question. I think it was okay. Norman, wasn't there? Was it 64?
Don't know.
Are you asking us?
That's a bad one, isn't it?
It's all right. You don't have to know. You're not. That CPD point isn't dependent upon it. Do you know your visitor numbers throughout the year? I think you mentioned it earlier, didn't you?
We have about 30,000 rounds of golf. Last year I haven't got the visitors numbers, but yeah.
Okay.
Sure.
Okay. So a couple more. What cultivars, Paul, have you used on your bent fescue green swards? What cultivars have you been using?
Well, I'm into Barenberg's fescue mix, just a typical greens mix with chains. The Ben grass. Do you know what? I've never overseeded Ben into my greens, to be honest with you, or anyway.
The second part of that was what percentage is bent of bent fescue are they? So that's zero bent.
As in percentage of what I've got on my greens already is probably 60-30 fescue bent. There's still a lot of bent in there. I've got a lot of Highland bents. It's the old bent. It's a little bit rugged. I'd like to get rid of the Highland bent. It takes a lot of refinement. And yeah, there's some great new bent grasses out there that would look better. But these are over 100-year-old greens, and it's trying to refine the old ones. So I haven't got into putting bent in my greens yet.
Okay.
Maybe for the future. Craig, okay. All about that.
Craig, you jumping in?
No. I've just seen a question there, and it's a great question that's come up.
Yeah, we're gonna get to these. The course record, thank you, Andrew, is 64.
So we're 63 here, Tommy Fleetwood, 63 in the Dunhill. We've got 19 pro tees. The sixth hole's got two pro tees. You can go forward if the wind's blowing. Rounds on the course, we are about 45,000 rounds a year on the championship. I think it's about 25,000 of that's visitors. Mm-hmm. Next year is going to be a crazy year because we're making up for this year and trying to get more revenue for next year as well. So I think we're looking at about 27,000-28,000 visitor rounds. It'll be quite crazy next year.
I imagine after the Open's been to town, those few months afterwards are crazy in terms of visitors, huge amount of visitors.
It's always busy, Carl. We're quite fortunate that we've got St Andrews and King's Barnes up here as well. So it's this is where people come for a holiday, golfing holiday. A lot of good courses up in Scotland.
Okay, I was just wondering how long it takes for the course to recover after the Open, but I suppose that depends upon things like
the weather.
Yeah.
We took a hammering in 2018 just for the dryness. We're never normally that dry with the amount of visitors we get. Took a hammering. We had to do a lot of overseeding on fairway bumps and things like that. So, needed a lot of recovery time.
Okay. There's a couple of more questions. What's the best way you have found to seed fescue? Is it disc or dimple seeder, in your experience? Either of you.
Do you want me to go or do you go, Craig?
We're using a black dimple seeder just now. Getting a lot of good results from that. In the past, we used this seeder. We do get quite dry up here, and it's prone to cracking up and things like that. So the dimple cedar, we've got a black cedar just now, so that's been very good. Doing a lot of overseeding with fescue just now.
We use the Fredo quite a lot. So the Fredo tends to, when we were talking about cultivars on the greens and everything earlier, so I get more. Feel like I get a better percentage with the Fredo in, but it hits the bent grass, so it sort of knocks back the bent to allow more fescue getting through. It's quite intrusive, so the golfers don't like it. You get little ridges. So I've got a Wiedemann Airtail, which is like a dimple seeder. They don't notice that we've done it when we seed with that, but I like to use a combination of both. I seem to guarantee the Fredo gets that seed in, so this year we've had good hit with it. So that's my preference, but it can dry out, and it's golfers tend to not like it so much.
Fair enough. Okay. Can I ask, what's your after the hammering, a couple of dry years, that kind of thing? What's the state of your irrigation system? Have you had much investment in it over the last few years? Paul? Yeah, Paul, your irrigation system.
Sorry. Yeah, we put a brand new system in 2018, just in time for the drought. The trouble that happened is I didn't have the water to put through it, or enough of it. So, yeah, the secret for this year, when you saw our failures the end of 2018, we really took a hit. So, in a way, we needed that to overseed quite heavily in 2018, the autumn. And then again in 2019. And to be fair, it's done a very good job to get us through all that, because we'd probably got by before, but the new system has allowed us to put the water where we needed it. But even now, it's been a drought of the year this year, still short of water again. So it's been quite difficult. I've changed the way how I irrigate on fairways and stuff. If there's a good thing about all this, we get an extra year to increase more fescue content in the fairways and the semi-rough that pretty much got there, but we can get it a little bit better now. But we're still, I'd say we're still recovering from the drought in 2018. And then get a year like this year, where we barely had any rain. It really is a struggle.
Could you give me an indication of what irrigation system you're working with? I imagine it's not just a basic sprinkler system. I imagine you've got quite some decent kit.
It's a Thirlinks. Yeah, it's expensive. It might have been £1 million or whatever. But for me, our old system, we used to water the rough a lot and everything. They just weren't firing where I wanted them to. So this time, no water is wasted. Everything's going to where I want it. It's quite hard, obviously, with the winds going against the directions you want it sometimes. Sometimes I can't put the irrigation on just because it's too windy. So I can't afford to waste water. So we just have to wait until it's calmer. Sometimes you just got to take the chance and just irrigate anyway. But it's a battle to use that water correctly. And it's just getting harder and harder each year to manage kind of like these dry conditions. And then of course the winter time, we get excessively wet winters and then excessive dry summers. That's probably the hardest thing we have to deal with.
Yeah, by way of comparison, how much water the two of you, Paul, how much water do you average using on your course a year compared to you 500 miles further north, Craig? Do you know your numbers?
It all depends on, it depends year to year, Carol. Mm-hmm. Like the last, well, from the start of this year, April, May, June, it was quite dry, so we're putting on quite a lot of water. We're doing a lot of overseeding on the greens as well, so you were keeping that seed moist. So, yeah, it's hard over the years. Now you're asking. Come on, Paul, jump in here.
Oh, jump. Well, so for me, I was really old-fashioned. I don't like to water fairways or anything. So my allowance until 2018 was 21,000 cube a year. Never went over that. On average, 19,000 cube a year. Fairways are pretty brown most of the time. But come September, October, fairways are back, nice and green, job done, perfect. But in 2018, we had the same amount of water. But come September, we had a heat wave that September, we had 35 degrees. Kind of got this little theory, we had a tiny bit of rain at the beginning of September. Fescue sort of come out of dormancy, but then boom, we had this 35 degrees heat wave for 2 weeks in September. And they never really recovered from that, and I couldn't get it back again. We managed to get another 10,000 cube that year as an allowance to try and get them back. It still wasn't enough. Heavily, the rains came the end of November, but it was too late because we lost the growth. To be fair to the golf club, we went flat out to try and do something about this. We built a reservoir. I've now increased my allowance to 33,000 cube a year, which probably isn't enough. Probably need 40,000. So I've doubled my amount of water, but we've put in, it's like Craig says, it's different things going on all the time. I've got 7 extra target greens. I've got a massive open range green that needs a lot of water. Climate change, without a doubt, what everyone says. It is definitely wetter in the winter, and we get hardly any rain in the spring anymore, and then the summers are dry again. So it seems like we're using a hell of a lot of water, but we're not. It's a struggle. So 40,000, I don't know, we might even need more in the future. So it is a struggle.
And where's that water coming from? Is it boreholes?
We've got a reservoir. We built a reservoir that can hold 31,000. Still got a bit of an abstraction license for the summer. But it really is a struggle because we're going into spring with such a deficit. You kind of got to get through the summer, and we just don't seem to get the rain. And you get it all in one go, it just seems to lump down. You don't get gradual rain anymore. So what I've learned over the last year is I rely on a lot of wetting agents at the moment. I'll water it in once a month, but I'll put it on really heavy. I'll try and get it on if it's raining. If it's not raining, I'll water it in heavy. And then that will have to do for the month. And then we go through the cycle again. So it's quite hard to plan this job when people want job sheets. So what are you going to do this week? Well, my job sheet works around the weather. If I know it's going to rain on Friday, out comes all the wetting agent and off we go. So everything's weather-based at the moment, rain-based.
How does that compare, hearing that, to your situation, Craig?
Yes, it's the same. Yeah, you're trapped. Try to work with the weather all the time. That's what you do as a greenkeeper. You try to use that to your advantage. It is getting warmer and drier. The seasons are changing. And you kind of feel like it is getting wetter in the winter as well. So for irrigation wise, we use borehole water. We are looking at upgrading our system, looking at different ideas, whether we use a lake or whatever. We're looking at trying to catch rainwater and things like that as well. So we're looking at all different options to the best of our abilities.
Okay, let's. I'm aware that we've got some esteemed colleagues from the RNA on this webinar, and I'm delighted to say that one of them has submitted a question. Let me just have a look at this one. On a serious note, they say, The Cure or The Smiths? Discuss. There's a bit of an inside joke there.
Come on, The Cure all day long.
I like both of them.
And you're miserable now, Craig, hey?
Well, that leads me on to the next one, which was, of course, at the conclusion of the Open, it's the greenkeeping team gets to take pride of place on the green, on the 18th green. There's a guard of honour. The question the industry was interested to know, Paul, for your penchant for footwear, was whether you were going to be wearing your famous Converses or not.
Great question. And lucky enough, I'm hoping Grant might be watching this, because I asked him that question, if he'd give me permission to wear my cons on the open day. And I was quite surprised that he said, yes, no problem. So attendance.
So that was a yes. Were you going to get some... Were you going to get some special new ones for that or not?
Especially commissioned, maybe?
Yeah, especially commissioned. Claret jug.
I do have a pair put by, but I'm not sure they're going to last a year now because they're still in the box.
Craig, as a greenkeeper, we're not used to being in the limelight. What is that experience like? On a serious note, what is it like being on the 18th green at the conclusion of the world's greatest golf tournament? What does that feel like?
Just a sense of pride, especially if it's gone well that week. But if it's not, I don't know how it feels like. But no, it's just kind of a bit of, we've done it. We've done a good job. It's you're proud. You're proud to be up there and be there with the winner. That's a good feeling. Good feeling. Good feeling for your family as well. Your family's maybe watching you in the stands, or my wife and kids were there, and it was good for them as well, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sorry, Paul, that you have to wait another year for that experience. I mean, you've had it before, of course, but are you, what's the plan? Is it, we're not going to cut our hair until then? Are we going to grow it out until then? Let it go a bit longer? What's the plan?
Well, funny enough, I was booked in for tomorrow, but we're so busy at work, he's got to survive another 2 weeks. But yeah, we'll have to think of something. But yeah, let's hope we're all still alive for a year's time so we can go through it all.
Absolutely right. Well, we'll just give I should have mentioned before this, we'll just give a few minutes for anybody's watching, if anybody's still watching, I should probably say, if there's any questions people would like to ask since we've got you guys here. I'm going to just pick out a question that I want to ask, and I'm sorry to ask this. You both mentioned how you have a Lynx club. Would either of you ever make the leap to Parkland? And what's your whole thoughts on that debate of switching between Lynx and Parkland courses?
Can I answer, Craig?
Go for it.
I was on a Parkland in Holland for 3 years, and I absolutely loved it. And it was fine. I kind of phoned Greg Evans up, asked for a few pointers on what you got to do with power. And it's stress-free, very easy. I just watered, fertilised, dirty cut, sanded, dirty drain, piece of cake.
I will be amazed if we don't get some feedback from that.
No, he's going to give a telling off on Thursday, I'm sure. But I'm tongue-in-cheek. I'm sure it's very hard. I would have no problem working on a Parklands before I came to St. George's. But now that I know what I do with fescue and all the rest of it, it becomes a way of life. And I think it'd be hard to transition to that kind of area. But I still think you can do it. And you know what? Most important thing is you make the course look the best that you can make it. And if it's a Parkland or a Lynx, it doesn't really matter. You're going to make that as good as you can do it. And it doesn't matter how you do it, as long as you do it. But for us, we've become, I think you just go into that finer detail of what we're learning. But you know what? If they got rid of me here one day and someone offered me a job on a Parkland course, I'd give it my best shot again. So, yeah, but it's a different, we all have a different way of looking at things now. And it is slightly different, obviously. But I admire some of the Parkland courses, and we need both. We need them in the game. And some of the courses, yeah. I played Sunningdale and like spectacular, even Woburn, all these courses, Wentworth, they're all fantastic up there with what they do. Doesn't mean that I'm going to do that, and they'd find it difficult to manage with what we're doing, I think.
Brilliant. Good answer.
Good answer, yeah.
Okay. One final question that I just received. You talked about moving on, perhaps. Do you guys ever see yourselves moving up the club ladder rather than the course management ladder and making that side step or that step into club management? You've obviously got vast amounts of experience of managing staff, budgets, all that kind of thing. Could you see yourself running the club, heading indoors?
I'm kind of more indoors at the moment anyway. I'm kind of more office based. I miss being out in the turf, which I did do. I was out all the time. And during the lockdown, it's been good to get back out again and get on cutting fairways or spraying or, you know, just things that I used to do. I do miss it. On a rainy day, maybe I quite like my office. I don't know about Paul. Maybe you want? Head upstairs, maybe.
Probably not. I don't know. I'm too working class to be upstairs.
Fantastic. Okay. All right, gentlemen. Well, we've been waffling on for more than an hour now. So I think if that's okay with you guys, we'll draw it to a close there. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you for your candor. And for giving us a real insight into what it's like at each of your golf clubs. Thank you everybody for tuning in to today's webinar. Look out for next continue to learn extra webinars. But I do want to point you in the direction of next Tuesday's, as I think it's going to be a real special one. Bigger CEO Jim Croxton is going to be joined by Craig Tracy MP, who's the co-chairperson of the All-Party Parliamentary Group for Golf. The two of them, as well as the rest of the golf industry, have worked incredibly hard over the last few months, you know, to advise government about the industry, about getting you guys back to work, and they're still going, you know, as the game reopens. I think it's going to be a really interesting conversation. So if you've ever had a question about anything that's happened over the last few months, like today, you're going to be able to tune in and ask. It should be really interesting. So I do hope you tune in next week. Gentlemen, thank you very much for joining us today. I've enjoyed the conversation. I hope everybody else has too. And to everybody listening, we hope you tune in again soon. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The Green Room Golf Course podcast is produced by myself, Carl Hansel, on behalf of the British and International Golf Greenkeepers Association. For questions, comments and concerns, you can get in touch with me by emailing carl@bigger.co.uk. That's Carl with a K. You can also join the conversation on social media using @greenroombigger. And we've also got a Facebook page where all the latest notices, news releases and information from Bigger can be found. We're also on Instagram using @bigger_HQ. Subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. The more people know about the sports turf industry, the more understanding they will have about the hard work of Bigger members and other greenkeepers. And speaking of Bigger membership, if you're inspired by what you hear to progress your career in greenkeeping, then a major first step is signing up to the association. The opportunities for career development are countless and potentially life-changing, such as volunteer opportunities at major tournaments and educational opportunities across Europe and the USA. Don't forget, if you're a golfer and you've got any questions about anything you hear on the podcast, have a conversation with the greenkeepers at your club. They've got the expertise to explain what's happening at the course and how it fits into the team's long-term vision to improve playability and enjoyment of the facility.